Welcome once again to the officially unofficial podcast for FX's American Horror Story, the American Horror Story podcast brought to you by baldmove.com. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily. This is the season called Hotel, season 5, episode 8.
You'd think I'd be
8.
Better at this at this point in the season. But
we
I'm
took
not.
A week off. You're rusty. No I am. One's holding it against you besides yourself.
Got to shake off the rust. Shake it off. What'd you think of this episode? Ooh, pregnant pause.
We got a, you know, what everyone saw coming, they explained for an hour to us. Just hammered us over the head with it. It was a good episode, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. We got some feedback about how many people saw this. Although I was reading a couple of reviews and half of them mentioned that, oh, we finally got the reveal that everybody's been expecting this
Seriously.
Whole time.
So, really?
I don't know, because Hef smoked it up pretty early in the season, but I'm like, how far, I mean, I'm trying to think, would this have worked better if they, I feel like that they would, the perfect amount of time would have been last episode at the very end if they just revealed that he's the Ten Commandments killer.
At the end of last episode?
Yeah. Like, if he, like, you know, since they're making these episodes be as long as they want to be, then he should have stumbled back to the hotel and had this conversation with Sally, and she should have... He should have had this whole realization, and then the rest of the episode could take place on this episode.
I thought they all but did that.
I know, but I'm saying, like, having him be ignorant about Rin, even though it was so blatant to us, I thought that was dumb. So,
or at the end of last episode, you leave it with them in the hotel room on whether or not they're going to escape. Start this episode with just the scene of them escaping the hotel, them having the conversation where she says, then you need to go back to the hotel. Runs down the street and dies.
Maybe.
It's an extra, 5 minutes?
I just felt like
the
first 10 or 15 minutes of this episode. I actually like the flashback and understanding how all this transpired.
Okay.
And I feel like I finally warmed up to Evan Peters' portrayal of JPM this week. Yeah. Something about the long speeches he had to give and old sport. I got into the kind of rhythm of it. And also...
I believe the whole time that you were biased.
And also John, like, with his hard-boiled, over-the-top dialogue.
That was bullshit.
It's like them dueling. It's like I got this perverse pleasure out of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it felt good.
Okay.
It felt good.
All right.
But no, that's what I think. I was like, I wish there was a way to yada-yada through the thing that we already knew so we could get to the stuff that we didn't know about the thing we already knew. Does that make sense?
Nope.
Okay.
You lost me completely. So let's just get right into it.
Rin got killed, y'all. Don't know if you remember.
Super dead. John runs into the street after she gets run over, and then he flashes back for a second to seeing her in a coffin. So, you know, obviously in his mind he's saying, but wait, she's already dead. How is she dead again? Whatever, I'm out. And he runs away.
But my crazy sort of ex-wife, the separate wife, told me that was all a dream. How can that be real? How can any of this be real?
It's not. We go back to the hotel, and Liz is barely maintaining.
She's sad, super sad, but she's not going to stop reading her brainy books.
And John
picks
the wrong time to come and fuck with her.
Not in the mood for John shit.
He demands to know where the Ten Commandments killer is, and Liz is like, I don't got time for this shit. He accosts her, and Liz is about to, I think, murder him? And then Sally shows up and intervenes.
I don't think he's going to murder him.
I'm joking.
Okay.
But, you know, just not a good time. Mm-hmm. Liz was super fierce in this scene.
Oh, yeah. When she, like, slaps the gun on the desk and slides across and says,
kill yourself.
You might want to take this with you in case you find what you're looking for. I mean, I can't even do the looking for.
No, you can't.
Because
it's a Dennis O'Hare exclusive.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like.
I mean, I'm sorry. I pronounced Russell Edgington wrong.
Russell Nietzsche Edgington in this season. He is pretty amazing how he can go from kind of Liz Taylor to terrifying. Like, I didn't think he was going to shift into that gear this season.
Really?
Uh-huh.
All right.
I mean, that's the thing that was fun about him with True Blood, as he plays this campy, vampy, gay vampire who also can rip your spine out. So Sanguinistas, man, you got to watch out for him. That's all I'm saying.
So Sally takes John back to room 64 at... John comes in, guns drawn, like, I don't know how ridiculous must Sally think this is, but it's like
she's in love. You know,
yeah.
What do you think about this time rhyming that they did?
So she says that this used to be JPM's office. He died there at 2:25, or I'm sorry, on 2:25, February 25th at 2:25 a.m.
Yeah.
So Sally tries to talk him out of self-actualizing into a serial killer. She shows him the answers behind the armoire, the murder safe. It's.
Do you think they'll find a lion or a witch behind there?
Only C.S. those Lewis weird humor. English candies. So it's Museum of the Ten Commandment Killers trophies.
Was it figgy pudding? Was it figgy pudding that little shit wanted?
I don't know. It was the something ice queen. Weirder.
Yeah.
Something even
like,
more bizarre.
Like a fig baby. No, that's the English are always eating like parboiled spotted dick babies.
It was a chocolate frog. So we see that he currently has 7 of the 10 commandments, which I keep getting confused with the 7 deadly sins.
I know. That's why I said at the end of the episode, I was like, oh, there's only 2 left. And you're like,
envy and wrath are missing.
And I'm like, we can tell the one who hasn't ever been to church.
I drew a rainbow with Jesus at the end once when I was a child.
Yeah, and you didn't burst into flames?
Well, I don't tell people that part of the story. Okay, so they've got, well, I'm not going to go over it again, but they have body parts corresponding to each of these sins. And they're missing 3 of them, which are, should we go over
envy,
that?
Envy, thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt have no other gods before me.
And also the...
Not me, Aaron, me, the Lord God on high.
We should still worship you, is that what you're saying?
No.
So the... also coveting your neighbor's wife is missing currently. We'll get to it by the end of the episode.
Well, I think that most... That's just like, just thou shalt not covet. God gets like in the minutia, like you shouldn't covet the wife and like the house and like if they have a really cute dog. That's off too. But like there's like 3 different things he said not to covet. But it's just pretty much when people quote it's thou shalt not covet straight up. But yeah, I had a lot of like really weird like Rain Man things were bugging me about this episode. Like
the fact
that I thought it was 2:22, 2:22, 2:22, and you know the did he died and I just messed that up. But also they showed a worker, they showed these migrant workers that were murdered on because they were working on the Sunday like they wanted to. And they showed 3 sets of adult teeth, and then they show that 6 people got murdered. So what, the other guy's teeth weren't good enough?
I think they took 1 row of each person's mouth.
But then why arrange them so they're in 3 sets of 2 complete teeth? It'd be one thing if like all the uppers or you had all the lowers, but it's like upper, lower, space, upper, lower, space, upper, lower. And I feel like there should have been 6 sets there.
There's not enough space in the jar.
Well, then leave out the spaces. This uncharacteristically sloppy work by JPM is all I'm saying.
I thought it was fine.
Okay.
So Sally tries to
Someone's
comfort
not a dental murder
him as he begins to remember things. And his memories come flooding back to him. And she says, it's you, John. Because we all knew all the time.
Everyone. What was wrong with Sarah Paulson this episode?
I don't know.
Like she...
I didn't think there was anything wrong with her.
You really thought that, it's you, John? You thought that... Or was it just a material week? Or did she just kind of phone it in a bit?
Again, I didn't see a problem.
Did you think that John and Sally have a bit of chemistry?
No, absolutely not.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
but it's not have anything. Sarah Paulson's acting as Sally has been the consistent throughout the entire episode or season.
That's what I'm.
She's always crying. She's always very dramatic and selfish.
I guess. I guess I never bought the relationship, and I don't. And I feel like that's. So I didn't find her performance satisfying.
Yeah, I buy her as the
because...
creature you wake up with in bed the next morning after a bender. Sure, I buy that relationship.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I know he articulated because, oh, she doesn't judge me and she doesn't care who I've killed. And I didn't care how many different sexual diseases and chemicals are in her body. But I just didn't feel, the relationship at all. And that's been one of the big problems. Like, honestly, the most believable relationship has been...
Sally and John. No.
No, Liz.
No, I'm sorry, Scarlett and John.
No, Liz and Tristan.
Seriously?
I mean, that's, and I'm not saying that like that was a love among the ages, but I thought that both What's-His-Face and Dennis O'Hare, whoever plays, who's plays Tristan Cheekbones, man?
His name is Finn Wittrock.
Yeah, Finn Wittrock. I thought Finn Wittrock and the Dennis O'Hare did the best job of selling that relationship.
All right.
I mean, there's, I mean, think about all the different relationships that are completely unbelievable. The gay fashion mogul who turned, you know, to who's in madly in love with,
I think the most believable relationship Lady Gaga is the Countess with herself.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Alex and Holden. I was like, oh creepy, Jesus. But accurate. Okay.
Iris and Donovan.
Well, yeah, that felt real for sure, but yeah, that's not exactly a romantic relationship.
Angela Bassett and Prophet Moses.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't get enough of that, but chemistry I believe in spades. It. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
She could have chemistry with a cardboard box.
Probably.
Like
I said, you'd think that about Lady Gaga, too, but then What's-His-Face, Will Drake, is empty suit.
Empty suit, you think so?
Yeah, I don't buy him... I don't buy him and her together. Gaga and Whitlock had chemistry though.
All right, how about Valentino?
That's what I meant. The Valentino and Gaga that had that actually had some chemistry to it.
Yeah,
but then again, black and white photography does a lot for some reason. People do it their weddings that way. Do it up black and white style to inject romance that doesn't exist.
What?
I don't know. I'm just thinking
that's
of like
a very bold opinion.
No, I'm
to
thinking
take
there's probably literally thousands
of
people with like sepia tone or black and white marriages that I've just, you know, like suddenly made irrationally defensive for no good reason.
Okay. Well, no, there was a good reason. You straight up attacked them.
I know.
You did.
I'm the Ten Commandments killer.
You're like Meg from The Guilty Remnant. You just went in there and
I will not be constrained by the laws of men.
You kidnapped them, doused them in gasoline, and then held a lighter close.
Okay, good. I didn't assault anyone.
I would never compare that. That's not even close to being a comparison.
My heart rate jumped up. That's all I'm saying.
And then you raped them. Okay, so John appears at the morgue and he meets his partner, Captain Thing Han, there. And we start the explanation all over again, longer and more detailed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Gonna slow down, take our time.
They're having this conversation over Ren's tiny little dead body. John says that I'd like to confess to murders. And his partner, Captain Thing, says, well, the first time you stayed at the Cortez Hotel, or Hotel Cortez, was 3 weeks ago. And he says, no, it's been 5 years ago. And the hard-boiled detective dialogue begins. So the first time was 5 years ago when he went on his bender after that one family died. And I'll tell you what, according to this timeline, it has been a nonstop roller coaster emotional ride afterwards. So... he ends up there after, I guess, everywhere else in L.A. closed down. He goes to this hotel bar.
Is that accurate, L.A.ians? I guess I assume that L.A. was kind of like Las Vegas. It just never shuts down. Like, you know, I've been shocked in a couple times. Like, when I went to Boston the first time, I was gobsmacked that you can't find a single goddamn bar open, like, past 1 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a college town.
The bars in Cincinnati stay open until 4.
I know.
It's insane.
And, like, Indianapolis is 3. I assume, like, New York City, L.A. is open. Like, Seattle's another early shutter downer.
Really?
Yeah. But I was just kind of shocked that the concept that you can't find a drink in L.A.
Austin, Texas is always... a big party town, too.
But it has, I think they it shuts down at 3, too, isn't it?
Well, 3 or 4, I think that's a reasonable time for people to go out and get trashed all night.
Sure.
But maybe it's the, like, Midwest or center of the landmass type of places where that's all we've got to do.
Or maybe they just, you know, they shut down early in L.A. It's like, you know, you wouldn't think that about Boston. I think that's a hard-drinking city. It's a college town.
Well... yeah, Bostoners just spend the whole day being drunk and rowdy.
Especially from like December to February,
it's
cold there.
They don't need to stay up all night.
Yeah.
So we've derailed quickly and very deeply. I don't know where I was. So anyway, he arrives at the bar to get the best martini in town. I personally want one of Liz's martinis. And
worth every penny.
He catches Sally's eye. But he also catches Donovan's.
He also catches HIV from sitting just, next to Sally.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little too extreme. Hepatitis C.
Yeah, Hep C. So Sally starts to slink over to him when Donovan cuts in, invites him up to a party where he can drink himself to death. Any thoughts on that whole shebang?
It's living the dream. Living the dream.
So when nobody's at the hotel, do Donovan, Sally, and Liz just hang out at the bar not talking to each other?
I feel like that's like the honey trap. Like, best cocktails in town, the attractive people with good blood walk in, and
so
then
when
Donovan,
you go in the front door, they...
It's a competition. Like, this addiction demon's got to drill someone in the ass every 24 hours, or I get sent to addiction hell. Or, you know, the Countess and Donovan need to roll around in a mattress full of blood. It's kind of like a toss-up who gets it.
Got it.
And then people that neither one of them want, they just shove in a random room and the other ghost
and
have
then
their
just
fun
so,
with them.
Yeah, got it. That makes sense. Totally. So, Elizabeth and James Patrick March are having their monthly dinner, and Miss Evers is tending to them. Donovan interrupts by bringing John, and Elizabeth scolds him for barging in on their one night, just as JPM starts to lose his shit. Donovan introduces John as a man who wants to drink himself to death. So, I assume that they occasionally bring people up there for JPM to just murder?
I don't know. I think not. I think that he's living vicariously through the Countess. And also, I don't understand why she's such a bitch to him in 2010. Like, this is before the revelation that he killed Valentino.
You know how some marriages fall apart in, like, 30, 40 years?
This has been...
No, I mean, like, when you spend that much time together, people, you know, start... You know, old married couples?
Sure.
They say just shitty things about each other, but they're never going to leave each other.
Yeah.
Okay, imagine that times two.
Yeah. But don't... I just... I wonder... I'm really curious to find out what it is about their deal, you know, that is referred to several times this episode. And it sounds like JPM has deals with a lot of the people. Like, the more... I mean, Sally is some kind of ghoul. She's not flesh and blood. But she's more real than, like, the ghosts, the German... Or the Swedish girls and...
Well, they're still married, right?
The hipster couples.
So there's that deal. I don't
know.
Are
they?
Yeah.
I hold that death severs the marriage bond.
Well, call me have you fashioned. Ever... What is the court's ruling on the spouse still being alive in corporeal form?
I think the judge would say, you're crazy. Quit dropping tabs, young lady, and get out of my courtroom.
We consider this marriage to be dissolved?
Yes.
All right. Well.
This is a court of law, not Ghostbusters.
Does he have some sort of ghostly power over her? Or over the hotel proper?
Definitely. I do think that he has, like, inside the hotel... He's got a lot of power, and he's not, maybe, I don't know, because I've never seen him kill anyone since he's a ghost.
Well, yeah, they stabbed that one guy a bunch of times.
Oh, you're talking about at his feast? Yeah. Yeah, I guess he can kill people. I don't know. But yeah, inside the hotel, he's got almost absolute power. But there's no reason the Countess has to stay there. Maybe when she ran out of money... During the but that just happened recently during the Bernie Madoff stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was in the 80s. That was about 20 years prior to where we are in
this
flashback.
No, the stuff happened in the 2000s.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah, Bernie Madoff got arrested in 2008. Now, his plan probably started the fail, but he started
it. When did he start doing it?
It says he began his Ponzi scheme in the early 90s.
Oh, okay. So I was close, but yeah. Off.
Although it says federal investigators believe that may have begun his fraud as early as the mid-80s.
Nice.
And as far back as the 70s. So, shit, you know, Katie barred the door. There is no upper or lower limit to this man's graft and greed and Elizabeth extortion.
So Elizabeth introduces herself to John as the Countess of Whatever You Like, Baby.
I love Donovan in the background, like, oh Jesus Christ, this woman.
So So March wonders, you know, how bad was your day? How much death was involved in it?
Mm-hmm.
And so we discover that the man who wants to drink himself to death overseeing a family murdered is mm-hmm. a man who is indifferent to life and death.
You speak of this with such a calm indifference, as if life and death have no meaning for you.
So he got really drunk and had a sober reflection? This is ridiculous.
I don't know.
Anyway, death is the only thing in life that has any meaning. I'm sorry, I can do that more Wes Bentley-er.
Death is the only thing in life that has any meaning. You guys say, as a detective, I know.
As a detective, I know that death is the only thing in life that has any meaning.
It's pretty Godfather-y, actually. It's like Wes Bentley via Godfather.
Let me put some tissues in my mouth and I can do it.
You're halfway there. Half a box
of... No, I can't do it.
No, come on now. Come on. People are not paying for this podcast. We got to give them their money's worth.
I think this is their money's worth. Elizabeth is dismissed as John... and JPM have their first absinthe together.
But I like how she vamps it up. Like, oh, darling, this is our night.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, really...
Like, oh, I really don't want to leave.
Yeah, she's really trying to store up store credit.
So on their nights on together, account. Do they, like, spend the night together?
I don't think so.
Little...
I think what he wants from her is her to tell him about all the people she's killed. Because that's the thing. She wasn't a vampire, or a glampire, excuse me. When they were together and quote unquote happy. So this is kind of a new thing. I bet that's what he's.
How long
really
were they even
her.
Together and happy for?
I don't. Less than a year. We know for a fact it's less than a year. Yep.
So you're right. But she was into murder stuff before she was a glampire.
That's true. But not before meeting him. Like, she really took a hard
turn.
But
who really knows?
She took a hard. Yeah, that's true. Because she really took a hard turn.
Yeah,
left.
Just she swerved.
Yeah. And still, where'd the baby come from? How does baby form?
All right, we have to stop thinking about this so hard.
It's really tripping me out.
You gotta stop thinking about
it,
hon.
We gotta save these brain cycles for the next, because everyone wants to know what the fuck we think is going on with the last two commandments.
Okay, got
it. So get ready for that.
All right. So March introduces himself as a man who went to Exeter and is an impersonation of an impersonation. I can't even do it.
He's doing
old stuff because he's super dead.
He's supposed to be doing like the Brahmin accent, which is like the upper class, you know, hey, old the boy, old sports, and I rode for Harvard and fucked a boy from Yale and that kind of accent, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess he's doing it. It's not good. When I think of that accent, I think of like the Kennedys. Mm-hmm. But he's not from Boston. So I guess this would be the L.A. upper crust accent.
Yeah.
But you know, no one ever talks like
talk
this anymore.
Your teeth and yeah.
Yeah. No one ever talks like the Thurston Howells of the world.
Uh-huh.
Everybody wants to just talk American.
Talk American.
Even the rich fuckers.
So.
They're just like us.
So March and John get to know each other more on their first date, and he reveals that he's super into aura play. And he says John's aura is jet black because he's either has a protective cloak for +10 focus, and the other reason is he has a need for a dom-sub relationship. Maybe I heard the wrong scene.
Is he a top or a power bottom?
I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how it all pans out.
Okie doke.
So JPM gives him a lesson on releasing rage.
And also absinthe. Did you mention that? They're just quaffing absinthe the whole time.
It was a cool absinthe distributor. Did you see it? The little urn thing. It had two spouts. So you set the glasses down and just... And it fills
really?
Up.
Really?
Yeah, it was neat. So
we must get one, darling. That's how all the people are serving absinthe this year.
Nope, I'm not gonna do Lady Gaga. So he wants to know if he's ever roughed up a suspect, and he says that he's considered it, but he controls himself.
What LA cop hasn't roughed up a suspect? That's the most unbelievable thing in this whole fucking series.
Yeah,
get out of town.
So there's a duality inside of him. He wants to uphold the law, but he also wants to release this rage because he's got anger for some reason. Just about his son, I guess?
No, this isn't.
His son hasn't even happened yet.
This is just, I mean, I buy this.
He's just an angry psychopath.
If you're murder police in a big city, you probably get plenty of, you either get jaded or you walk around like
this
guy.
Hell yeah, I read and seen Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
So they stay drunk for 2 days straight and talk and get to know each other, and still a better love story than Twilight.
Show me a worse one. And you can't say 50 Shades of Grey, because that's cheating.
Darn it. So, JPM asks for Elizabeth's help in developing John into the perfect protege. She believes that he can't let go. She's seeing the good in him, despite him. And JPM offers her his beautiful, tiny, blonde son. And John is kind of awake, so he's just tripping balls through this whole thing. And he wakes up in the car outside of the house the next morning, doesn't remember how he got there.
Yeah.
I guess after he left the hotel, it's implied that his memories have escaped him. They ran away, I mean. he comes inside and Alex and Holden are just leaving for the morning. He says, "I wasn't cheating on you." And she says, "I know. It's worse than that. You're just a shitty person." Yeah, Holden.
Did you like Alex more after this episode, after you saw what? Because I think when we first met John, we're like, oh, this is a guy who reads his daughter's bedtime stories over his Snapchat, and he's a detective, and he works really hard. I feel like now he's just been a raging asshole for a long, long time.
I don't think so.
It doesn't make her more interesting or likable as a person, but I'm saying that, like, I want to walk back a little bit of some of that, you know.
No, I don't think so.
I'm in love with my son criticism.
I don't think that he had a habit of going out drinking ever.
Until that first time, it just got to be too much for him?
Yeah. I mean, that was a pretty horrific scene that he came in on.
Sure, yeah.
So I'm sure that drove him to go on a bender, which is only meant to be one night. Who could foresee what happened?
Okay.
Turn into three nights, I guess.
Yeah.
But.
And he had sex with the.
I don't know. She did kind
of. Undead, coked up, heroin-infused Sarah Paulson.
Yeah, so I can't.
Teeth fall out at the slightest provocation.
Yeah, when you're grinding them against each other.
No,
the slightest provocation.
You poke your tongue in there, there goes an incisor.
Ugh. So, who knows what he did before this, but after this, it's clear from the rest of the episode that he starts to do this more often.
Okay.
He starts to sneak off to the hotel for days at a time, maybe one night every once in a while to be with Sally.
Sure.
Alex doesn't give a shit.
Oh, yeah.
It's never really mentioned. So, he says that after Holden was taken, everything else in his life started to go. So, he would sneak off to the hotel, and he and JPM were having their romantic dinners together.
Mm-hmm.
March says, "Do you know what the difference between me and you is? The difference between us is pain." And he says that John just needs to let go and that he is due his justice.
I've shed my load.
So he takes this opportunity to introduce John.
Let me just get this out. I'm tired of this dry, racking cough.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Back on track.
Peace among worlds, Aaron.
Peace among worlds, Cecily.
So, March introduces John to the trophy room.
For the second time.
Yeah, his first trophy room. So, they're walking through. He says, "Why is this room dark? There's some things you're not meant to see yet." But there are animal heads culminating into a human head, his accountant, Henry, who did more than steal his money. Yeah. Any speculation on what the rest of the dark room is? That he can't see yet. Is it wallpapered in human skin?
Ooh, that's a good idea.
No, it's not. It's contrived. Ed Gein already did it.
What if he murdered people and he had, like say he had a display of blonde children starting at 1 year old all the way up to 2 years, and like he had like a 1 year old, a 2 year old, three, and he has them all mount taxidermy style, so they're like a, you know, one of those, like a Matryoshka doll. Matryoshka doll. Is that fucked up? Is that what you're wanting from me?
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's like the caveman evolution.
Well, I was kind of going for that too.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I don't understand why March is interested in little blonde children.
Well, I just trying to think of something horrifying. They don't have to be blonde. They can be of mixed ethnicities and hair colors and...
Just a bunch of taxidermy children?
Sure, yeah.
I don't know. He seems but to have a stance
the height,
on
it's
that.
The height curve is what I wanted. You know, like a smooth gradient from like 2 foot to 6 foot
want?
Tall.
That's what you're envisioning?
Ooh, well, busted.
You need help, you sick pervert.
No, you just want the next time I kill for you to be able to watch.
So,
you blew your line, goddammit.
Sorry. So John's not down with that. And March emotionally blackmails him into doing it anyway. So John goes back to work and just is not getting no satisfaction with his justice that he's receiving. So 2015, John goes back to March because he wants some comfort in the arms of a psychopath. So March describes a man who brought his nephew to the hotel to...
Well, not he just wants comfort, but his son's been abducted in the meantime. And he's coming back on his, like, 10th anniversary, or 10th birthday. He would have been 10 that year.
Yeah, that's comfort, right?
Yeah, okay. I want a more specific comfort,
all right,
okay?
More specific comfort has been given. So March describes a man who brought his nephew to the hotel to molest him and photograph him. This man is named Gamboa. John shows up at his house that day, I suppose, after responding to a Craigslist ad to buy an Oscar. How did he make that connection? I'm now wondering.
What?
That he has a Craigslist ad selling Oscars?
I don't... Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's... Who put him up to that?
Nobody posts their full name.
Well, it's like... No, that's... Ad. Plus, that's just super... Yeah. That's super convenient that...
That he happens to also be selling Oscars that night?
Yeah, or that week.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Whatever. Saving my brain power.
Yep, save it.
So
conserve it.
So he picks up the Oscar and he tests its weight. And then he throws down the pictures of the little boy. And Gamboa tries to deny that he's ever seen them or that they're his. What do you think? What's your opinion on his guilt or innocence?
I thought they were going to go for the fact that he's being framed, because when he looked at it, it goes, you know, I was thinking, like, all we have is JPM's word that he is not in any of these photographs that I saw. But then when John confronted about it, he started acting pretty guilty.
But the
one thing that I thought maybe would indicate that he didn't, because he did seem pretty unafraid about him just going to the cops, and he wasn't really agitated until like he got in his face with the Oscar. But nah, the way he acted and when he said, you know, just please, I'm just a man who likes a podcast about television and movies. And I'm like, speaking of getting defensive.
Wait, podcast?
No, I know.
Freudian slip.
I know. No, it's not Freudian slip. I'm doing a bit here.
Sorry. Bit ruined. Edit that out. Start over. Because
the joke is that they think all podcasters are pedophiles, or perhaps all podcasters are pedophiles. I don't know what the joke is there.
Wait, is this not Freudian anymore? Do you have something that you need to
no,
tell me?
No. Yes, I do. It's Ryan Murphy's position that all podcasters are pedophiles, and I, for one, am sick of this mischaracterization.
It's the first time I've ever heard that, but I feel that you are being... victimized.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a safe space for non-pedophile podcasters to talk about their victimization at the hands of Ryan Murphy's of the world. It's a pretty big support group.
So he uses the Oscar to beat him to death and eventually sodomize him with it.
Yeah, we know that it eventually gets lodged up in there pretty good. Gets wedged up there pretty tight.
That's fucked up.
Well, dude,
I mean, that really disturbs me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I hate that whole thing. It's like, you know, it's what you saw with the Jared Fogle. It's like, oh, all the jokes
it's
about
the
how
way
much he's...
that you use it.
All the jokes about him, how much he's going to get raped in prison and how happy people... I'm like, oh, that's kind of gross. But on the other hand, this guy did...
No, that's
this,
fine.
This guy did sexually exploit an 8-year-old, so...
Yeah.
And it's a fiction show.
What, real life?
Yeah, the man, the movie podcast guy is not a real person.
Yeah, no, I don't care about the person himself. It's just the whole act, the thing. It's terrible.
Okay.
So this upsets him as much as me, and he tries to go kill himself while Sally watches. Sally's been watching and creeping on John all along, and she starts to creep in between JPM and John. And we have a scene of them watching TV in bed together.
Did you have any thoughts? Sally is a bottomless pit of need. She accepted me. I accepted her and her herpes.
You sound like Batman when you do that.
So does he.
You sound like Batman when you do that voice.
He's totally bailing it.
I lost it. I had it earlier.
Yeah, you did. So they're hate.
I'm just gonna start doing my Batman.
they're hate watching a televangelist. What did you think about them being the televangelists being the TCK Ministries? I'm kind of like, come on, man, on the nose.
This is a
was it cute or
split
was it...
personality flashback? Who knows what was actually on the television?
Oh, that's true. That's true. It could be. Are you saying like it's a Mr. Robot, Evil Corp kind of thing?
Yeah.
All right. I feel you.
Yeah. I mean, it's also the TV station in the Hotel Cortez, so even if that's what was really on, was it really on? Did that guy actually die in that room?
Right,
and he's
right.
Inhabiting the TV? That's his...
Sure.
His purpose? I just did an Irish instead of a Swedish. I'm so bad at this. I'm worse than Jim. She reaches over and picks up his wallet and starts to look at the picture of his family when he... snatches that out of her hands and leaves. JPM cuts him down angrily, and he blames Sally for letting this happen. He says, in order for us to keep our agreement, and to keep Sally protected from the addiction demon.
Who keeps on flashing and...
Yeah, so we learn that she is the ultimate target of the addiction rapist demon.
Yeah.
Unless she keeps feeding him the addiction demon things?
I think so.
I don't know. They have a weird relationship.
Honestly, I felt like there was a lot of confusion with Sally here. Because why, now that we know about Sally, who she's so in love with John, why is her deal sobbing why the drill bit sodomist kills her latest victim and she makes him say, I love you?
I don't think that that's a thing she does all the time. I think that's just the thing she did then.
Why?
I think if that she's in love with John. This addiction demon have this weird
relationship
when they're preying on people.
And then what's with the sewing in the mattresses? That's the other thing. What
does
that do?
I don't think that's supposed to make sense at all. I think that it's...
I mean, they have a corpse hole. Sally's too good to use the corpse hole.
What, you just to dump bodies down the chute?
Yeah. That's what they do here. That's
not interesting.
Standing operating procedure.
You can't ask them to explain something that happened multiple episodes ago.
I kind of was hoping that more of this would make
sense. Here's what happens now.
Okay.
March has an agreement to keep Sally protected from this addiction demon in exchange for her keeping John on track to become a serial killer. And her reward for all this is to get to keep John when he dies in the hotel forever. She's afraid that he's going to die out in the real world, so he won't be trapped in the hotel with her forever.
I have a question.
So he tells her to recruit someone who can help him.
I have another question.
So naturally you think of a small child.
Sure. Why didn't Alex notice the noose burns on his neck or anyone that he worked with? Like, there's prominent ligature marks on this homicide detective.
No, he was using soft silk ties.
No, but I'm saying I actually saw it. I actually saw on the marks and the burns on his neck. How do you hide something like that?
I'm trying to help Ryan out by making up excuses, but there are none.
They just go walk around LA as a murder investigation with pop collar. Like, I'm just trying this thing out.
My name is Batman, and I wear makeup over my wounds.
Maybe that's true.
He could have just wore makeup.
Yeah.
Okay. Objection withdrawn.
He could just go on another 3-day bender and everyone will
maybe
just be like,
Liz,
oh,
that's
John. What,
that's he goes in and Liz touches him up.
What if he's wearing collared... Liz.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, canon. Confirmed fact.
Yep.
So
add it to the American Horror Story wiki. They'll love you for it.
So Sally is giving John a bath, and he says that I want to remember you when I leave. She says the hotel won't let you do that because it is a cruel mistress. And he tells her that he killed a man for the first time tonight, and it felt like justice, and he loved it. And then Q marched to show up and encourage him not to feel guilty, but embrace that darkness within him. So March shows him the murder safe where the Ten Commandment murders are beginning. Currently, he only has the thievery one and the, lust, wrath, envy. Which sin?
What are you talking about?
What's the second sin? The Sabbath. Not to work on the Sabbath day is the second commandment murder that he's committed so far. And he wants John to complete his work in memory of his only begotten son. Is that the word he used?
Yes. Now, is this a clue about the nature of Bartholomew?
No.
Because that could be taken as both ways.
Okay, explain.
That he's continuing the work of J.P. Morgan. Or I'm sorry.
The evil work of the Chase Bank. You didn't know about
the secret origins of Chase Manhattan, did you? Oh, God. All right. We had to legit take like a 60-second crying laughter fit there. JPM says, you continue the work of the Ten Commandments killer in memory of his son. But he could have been talking about either one of them. Like, if he got Gaga impregnated and somehow he was doing all these killings to seal some kind of spell or to heal his son or to appease...
He's not a witch. That was a different season.
Okay. I don't know. I just thought it was an ambiguous wording. And the parenthood of Bartholomew and why he's all fucked up and that is something we're supposed to be talking about.
No, I mean...
Save my brain power, I know.
The way he worded it was, your only begotten son.
Hmm.
So it didn't seem ambiguous to me.
Okay. I don't know. The only begotten...
But I like that theory.
The only begotten is just, it's all Christy. And it has me thinking about Bartholomew.
Bartholomew still soups alive.
No, totally. Well, is he?
Yes. It's current day. He's still alive.
I know, but I'm saying, is he alive? Like, alive, like, biologically, you and I alive?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I guess Elizabeth is still alive.
He was crawling around. He escaped from the hotel.
No, I don't mean,
he was bleeding.
Like, I mean, alive in the sense of, like, Sally alive. Like, supernaturally alive. Because he's clearly something weird. He hasn't aged a day.
Yeah, he's part vampire.
Okay. Glampire. But that's what I'm saying. Vampires are not undead in this world, yeah? They're just infected.
No, they're immortal.
Speaking of glampires, where the hell are the kids?
There's
an army of vampire children running around LA since Halloween.
Oh, shit, you're right.
And they have just completely dropped that.
They've been keeping it soups on the DL. Those are some cool kids.
What have they been doing? What have the kids been doing?
Just hanging out.
For the last month. Okay.
Staying up all night.
We need to
video games and
firmly grab the wheel and jerk it back onto the road. This is.
Save your brain power.
Yes. Somehow we've managed to take 30 minutes to recap the last 5 minutes of this episode.
So we're back in the morgue, present day. Han says, so you're telling me you've been to this murder scene more than one time?
This is a really complicated narrative structure.
And John says, no, it was my third time being there. I can't. I fucking lost it.
Yeah.
So he says that, you know, me and your wife, we text all the time and we Snapchat and we send little emojis and
I sent her a picture of my dick.
Facebook message and I connected with her on Tinder and and we have coffee sometimes and we talk about you.
We both swiped right.
Yeah. And so John uses this very thinly veiled excuse to fuck the pain away with Sally because he thinks his wife's cheating on him.
Uh-huh.
What odds would you give them actually having an affair, Han and Alex?
Zero. because I feel like we would have gotten that from Alex's point of view in her long monologues about dealing with grief and all that.
I don't think so. Alex's point of view, she's like a super, like, an Indian goddess of momhood with like eight arms and just all motherly love.
I don't know. I still stand by that. I think if she had had a relationship with John's coworker and that didn't come up in her, you know, whole soliloquy about her existence, I would feel like I got gypped a bit. I got screwed over. Sorry.
Post, yeah.
I don't want to
fit.
You're
always attacking the gypsies.
I know. This is twice in 1 week. I got a problem.
You know they're out there wandering, listening to their podcast.
They're stolen podcasts. Yeah, I'm not sure. on their stolen iPhones.
Oh, my God. Okay, so if Han hasn't died, Alex and John post-divorce, what odds do you give Alex and Han?
Zero, because I don't think there's any relationship there. I think he's just being a friend
Bullshit.
To John. I think that's the whole theme of the episode.
No,
that John,
fun to play this game.
John,
I'm moving on. I don't care.
That John
what
is not a great judge.
Is.
He can't be judge, jury, and executioner because he lets his personal feelings get
I'm
in the
not
way.
Asking what John's fucking opinion is. I want some gossip out of you.
That's what I'm saying. The fact that John thinks they're fucking makes me think they're not fucking because that's the theme of the episode.
So, John is giving Han really solid evidence on why he's the murderer, and he's desperately trying to talk him out of it.
Yeah,
and just generally being a really shitty cop and gets himself killed.
Yeah.
After telling him that he does not deserve Alex. So he did have feelings for her.
I mean, Maybe I'd buy that. But I don't know. I felt like that he was trying to look out for a cop that who might be slowly losing his mind and didn't want him to do something stupid.
So John comes back to the hotel with a bleeding bag and he starts to pretend like he doesn't know what's going on. But he has managed to retain his memories, this time to the relief of Iris, who was sick of his shit.
I find it very satisfying that he brought home the man's nuts in a baggy sack.
Yeah. So he says his only regret is Ren dying, and Iris says, well, it's totally Sally's fault. She got her involved.
Yeah.
And she says, if you know it's good for you, just fuck off immediately.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, she fully expected him to do that.
Yeah. So he's insistent on committing to this path. And March, as he puts the balls in the jar, March congratulates him on his ball score and for embracing his macabre artistry and welcomes him home. And John looks like he's out of his damn mind.
Yep.
And comfortable there.
You know, the one thing you're talking about when he's given all the evidence, his partner demanded, give me something new. And he goes, I'll give you something. When I was in the twins' house, I saw a man in a bowler hat that was me.
Oh, I didn't mention that. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's. I don't think you skipped over. I don't think you had to give it. I just thought that was such a bizarre, like, what does that prove? What the fuck does that prove? Like, if you're trying to convince your partner that you're not crazy, saying you saw yourself manifesting physically as JPM is not the way to do it.
Yeah, that's weird.
Because that's really the only, so I know there's someone, I think it might be Doug L., who's playing like the devil's advocate in the email of like, maybe this is a double fuck that John is not the murderer. For some reason, JPM needs him to think he is and to take credit/blame for it, but he's not in fact a murderer.
I don't think so.
I think I would be supremely annoyed if that would turn out to be true. But
yeah.
The only, like I said, the only evidence that he, it seems like the only evidence that he actually concealed of all of his crimes was the fact that he saw a reflection of himself that looked like JPM in a bowler hat.
Yeah, or he just manifested this some sort of hallucination.
Yeah,
saw it happen much better on The Leftovers. I'm all in for manifestations of hallucinations. Right,
sure.
Now.
Yeah, we like him.
And I also didn't mention the cheating couple. I thought it was interesting how they just smoothed over the fact that they all met at the Hotel Cortez, but
yeah, there's no way Murphy. I have a sneaking suspicion that there's no way Murphy was writing this episode while they were filming the first one.
It had That's to weird,
because there's really a lot of things that don't make sense about Sally's characterization.
Because they could have absolutely been murdered in the hotel. How many other people were also murdered in the hotel?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Murphy's like, well, I don't want to make it too obvious he's the Ten Commandments killer. I don't know.
Did they explain how John is a super genius computer tech hacker and he can send text messages from what looks like other people's phone numbers?
Well, yeah, because I think he used both of their phones when they were at the sea. Because they showed him playing with both of their phones when they were having shower sex in the Cortez. So, yeah, they kind of hand-waved that away. Is that the episode?
That's the entire episode.
All right. Well,
that's the entire episode.
Let's talk some feedback, because we got quite a bit to speak. Michelka? Okay, I think is how I pronounce the name. It's how I'm going to pronounce the name. I know it's how I'm going to pronounce the name. I might not be correct, but that's how I'm pronouncing it.
I'd have to see it. I could help.
It talks about the previous emailer about the Rudolph Valentino's grave. She says they did, in fact, film the scene in front of the exact grave of Rudolph Valentino. And she says, parenthetically, his remains are niched inside the Hollywood Forever Columbarium. It's also interesting to note that Cinespia uses the exterior walls of this very building to project the movies on for their screenings, where Nosferatu was shown earlier in the season. So we knew that they filmed at the graveyard, but I don't think anyone said that they actually used this building that they were in, this mausoleum, as a cinema screen.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. I'd go see a film. I think we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
My newfound love of graveyards. Jesse K says, hey, this is Jesse K from Charleston, South Carolina. For future reference, I'm a guy. I think.
Oh, shit.
Well, I mean, how are you supposed to know? I can't ever remember is it the IE that's the girl? SSE is the boy, I guess.
I've met men and women named Tracy, spelled exactly the same.
So, yeah.
I've met a man named Sue.
I've only met a boy or heard tell of one.
I don't think that names should have a gender assigned to them immediately.
Well, Jesse, we're going to assign him to the masculine one.
How do you know?
Because he just said it. He gets to define his own sexuality, I'm pretty damn sure. I wanted to say something. I'm a college freshman. I was watching with a few friends. I listen to many of your podcasts, and I like to think you've taught me how to notice obvious things like John being the Ten Commandments killer.
Or like when a man named Jesse is masculine.
I called it several episodes ago and they all said, yeah, sure, maybe.
We can't take credit for that. That was all Jefe, El Jefe.
Yeah. Well, when they were all surprised when the big reveal came last night, to me it seemed incredibly obvious, but they had no idea. I figured I should write in and let you know that there are definitely people out there who didn't see this obvious plot twist coming.
My bad.
I have to ask you, though, were these people actively watching or passively watching? Because my newest pet peeve on Reddit and elsewhere, the shows are being discussed, are people that are playing on their cell phones and participating on message boards, asking about obvious things that they missed because they're not actively watching the show.
Wait, the people are on the message boards during the show, yes. So they're missing things.
Yes.
That's
and it's
ridiculous.
Leading to a lot of bullshit, stupid theories that are crowding out some of the good stuff. So, like, I feel like that's just happening a lot. I hear, you know, like, Bill Simmons talks about, oh, this is something you can watch and read emails on your cell phone. I submit that almost nothing.
I don't think I can do that.
I mean, I do it. Like, we're watching Community right now, and sometimes I'll browse my phone because who gives a shit?
If it's fluffy stuff like that, absolutely. But I can't multitask like that if I'm actually invested in a show.
Now, Bill Simmons would say, fuck you, man. I don't podcast on
television.
Fuck
you, Bill Simmons. You want to go?
Yeah. He's like, you probably browse your cell phone when you watch football. And I'm like, guilty as charged. So, you know, we all have our areas of focus.
How do you stay 100% focused on 3 fucking hours of football? That's
especially
the worst example ever.
Especially with the commercials that really break the action and flow. Anyway, he says, besides all that, I thought that the episode is all right, but sprinkled with the usual American Horror Story bullshit as always. I do think Evan Peters is doing his most versatile acting this season. I disagree with you there,
Jesse. I agree completely. 100% is his best role ever. He's not a good actor, though.
This is a role that's right in his wheelhouse. He's not having to cry. He's not having
Wait,
to
I want
be
you
anguished
to defend
or
it
angry.
In his accent, in a Branham accent.
He doesn't have to cry. He doesn't have to get angry or irate or upset. I've lost it.
It's good. I love
it. Up. Old sport. So yeah, I don't think it's versatile. I think the lack of versatility and the fact that they just really pounded his square peg into a square hole is why he's able to shine. So he says, in every past role in which he has had dialogue seemed very similar to me, while we at least get a little new flavor from his character each season.
That's true.
And again, like I not giving him Emma Roberts as a love interest helps. Not having him have to show
or
very
Thaisa
strong emotion.
Farmiga, just not taking him out of the teenage roles really helped him, I think.
Well, no, that's the other thing. I thought he did a bang-up job in season 3 because he played a mentally handicapped, resurrected Frankenstein character, which is also in his wheelhouse. Like, that's
a real speaking role.
Yeah, like limited like grunts and groans and blank facial expressions or plastered-on smiles and exaggerated ludicrous accent. That's where you want to be, Evan Peters. Stay in that lane. Emily Kay said, I predict the final commandment will be, thou shalt not kill, and John will kill himself. Then Sally will get him forever and will be a happy ending.
Depends. Does he kill himself in the hotel? Bum, bum, bum. What if he kills himself right outside the gates in front of Sally?
Yeah. Doug L. also, I'm going to get to this, more of his stuff later, because I'm curious to see how they handle the remaining two commandments, which are actually also the first two. So here's the thing. I don't consider I am the Lord your God to be the first commandment. Because if you go with that, then you have to eliminate one of the other commandments that they've already covered. So I think the first commandment is that you shall have no other gods before me. I am the Lord your God is just a preamble.
So you're saying there's 11 commandments?
The Bible itself lists two separate 10 commandments.
So what is the general populace's opinion on what are the 10 commandments?
Is
the Lord your God one of them?
No, I think it's you shall have no other gods before me.
Okay, well then we're not going to do that.
So I think what's left is thou shalt have no other gods and thou shalt not murder.
Okay.
With that, what do you think is going to happen? I've got an idea.
Shall not have any other gods before me and shall not murder.
Yeah.
I think she's onto something with the whole suicide thing. I think that in order for John to fully assimilate into the hotel culture, he would have to die there and stay there forever.
See, I think
maybe
that...
once he dies, he could take over JPM's place.
Well, I think that JPM sees himself as God. And he wants to be died, or he wants to be
died. He wants to be
died. He wants to be murdered. He wants to be killed. He secretly wants to be released from this existence.
Uh-huh.
And somehow John is going to spirit kill him, and then he's going to kill himself as the thou shalt not murder punishment.
All right.
Alternatively...
Burn down the hotel and be done with it forever.
Alternatively, John, by being the judge, jury, and executioner, has been and saying he can read the hearts of men and be say if they're guilty or not, is putting himself in the position of God. So he kills himself, and then JPM vanishes from the spectral plane to do the thou shalt not murder. But although that wouldn't fill the trophy case with anything. You can't fill a trophy case with a ghost.
Or what if he... becomes a lumberjack in the woods somewhere.
Doug says, so is Wes Bentley going to murder God? Is God in this universe Ryan Murphy? Is Ryan Murphy going to be murdered? Now that would be compelling horror television. I don't think Ryan Murphy's going to kill himself.
Wait, if we're talking about murdering the actual God, then I think I would rage quit the show if they killed Russell Edgington.
Ooh. Russell Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
All right, let's. I had to jump around a bit. Let's get back on track. George S., welcome back from the one-week hiatus. Although I thought the reveal of John as the Ten Commandments killer was a little contrived, I found a little connection to last season's Freak Show that also ties in with the Top Hat clue. Everybody wants to revisit the Top Hat this week. As both of you remember, the Top Hat was supposed to be a clue to this current season, and the only character I remember constantly wearing a Top Hat in Season 4 was our own Wes Bentley as the true freak Edward Mordrake.
Bum, bum, bum.
I realized the Top Hat was the clue about the,
The Fred Astaire movie.
And that was an inside reference to Lady Gaga with the cheek to cheek. And I get that. And the whole hotel and the homage to the movie. But he's going in another direction here. He says, yes, Wes Bentley goes from playing physically a two-faced freak with one face deemed evil and one deemed, I guess, not evil, to playing a detective living two different lives, one definitely more evil than the other. The duality of John Lowe is very apparent in this episode and made me think of Mordrake instantly. Do you think that Murphy was not content to let things be, to let good enough be, and just started working in top hats everywhere you can do it? Left, right, and center.
No. But I will give him full credit for what
I like how, I like how you let George down easy.
No. I completely agree. I'm not going to give Ryan Murphy credit for having thought that out.
Yeah.
But having Wes Bentley play this
no, sure.
Dual personality lead role absolutely fits in. I like that.
I mean, we talked about this a lot on Breaking Bad. The fact that as much awesome inside stuff and how satisfying some of the connections in Breaking Bad can be. Or sometimes they're just by accident. Like listening to the podcast, the Insider podcast, like Vince Gilligan cops out, like, yeah, we never really intended that, but I'm glad I got on the, you know. So sometimes you get happy little accidents, even with Ryan Murphy.
Like when I pee my pants a little bit.
P.S., George says, the top hat also alludes to the famous story of Jekyll and Hyde. It's about a London lawyer named Gabriel Utterson who investigates strange occurrences between his old friend Dr. Henry Jekyll and his evil Edward Hyde. The work is commonly associated with the rare mental condition called a split personality, referred to in psychiatry as dissociative identity disorder, where within the same body there exists more than one distinct personality. In this case, there are two personalities within Dr. Jekyll, one apparently good and the other evil, just like John Lowe. I will predict that we have a few psychiatrists and psychologists emailing in saying that's not what dissociative identity disorder is. That's just a popular media thing and Sybil and it's how it's a bunch of bullshit, which is probably true. But I like where George is sailing here. I like the cut of his jib.
Yeah.
Let's revisit Doug L here. He says, what can I say about this week's episode besides arg? It's essentially the sound that Charlie Brown makes when a football is yanked away from him.
Perfect.
For the umpteenth time. Uh-huh. The whole John is the Ten Commandments killer thing felt completely mishandled, and I don't just say that because I was repping a different theory. Some theory butthurt is happening right here. The problem was the show dropped so many clues that John was the killer that the only satisfying twist would be if someone else was the killer instead, unless the show is using reverse psychology, and AHS just doesn't have the ability to pull that off. I predict at least one psychiatrist or psychologist would be like, that's not how reverse psychology works.
I hope all the psychologists or psychiatrists are out there taking notes on all the things they need to retort on.
Yeah, we need a full report. The fundamental problem, Doug continues, I had going in this episode was that the TCK killings had been going on before John ever went to the Hotel Cortez, a fact John's superior's officer explicitly points out to him. To solve that problem, the show retcons the fact that John had been going there since 2010 and he had no memory of it, and that every character treated John as if they had no previous knowledge of him. The fact was withheld until this episode, so it felt completely contrived. After all, John somehow failed to bump into Holden for 5 years, even though he was consistently wandering around the hotel all the time. I now know what was in the darkened areas of JPM's trophy room.
What?
Ryan Murphy frantically typing out the script for the finale. I think that's what... You're right. This is not a retcon. You can't retcon something that didn't happen yet. Like, this is a very fluid... Like, think Rick and Morty. Multiple dimensions. You just popped into a different one is all, Doug.
It's happening. Yeah. It's just happening somewhere else. It's not in this universe.
Sure, yeah. John is not the Ten Commandments killer in the timeline of episodes 1 through 3.
Yeah.
But we hop timelines, I think. And
we're here now?
We hop timelines when the children attacked L.A. because they're not around anymore.
No, they're in the old timeline.
They're in the old timeline. We went to a different timeline that now John is the killer.
Yeah.
That's what is going on.
Mischief managed. You figured it out.
That said, I did like the Evan Peters as the worm tongue stuff, and I am curious to see how they handled the remaining two commandments. Oh, we already got to. Yeah, like I said, they didn't quite round off all the square corners in this episode. God, I feel like that's my new thing. I can't stop saying
that's the phrase of the week.
It's pegs and holes and rounding off corners. What? I'm just like a fucking parody of myself.
No.
God. So disgusted. I'm just going to move on to Underwood. Should we? Do you want to say anything more about Doug's email?
No, he was great. Great email.
Underwood says, when John was talking to his detective partner towards the end of the episode and he's trying to convince John that he didn't do it, and even John for a moment looks like he's having some doubts about being the killer suddenly, I was thinking to myself, holy shit, maybe John actually isn't the Ten Commandments killer. This is going to be a double twist. But then John stabbed him and my excitement faded. I like this episode and the season in general. It's just there's some things that seem so obvious to me that would elevate so many things. At the same time, I would never think up a whole season of a show and write so much dialogue, so who am I to judge? Oh, what is this bullshit? This is what we do here at Bald Move.
We judge
showrunners and writers
we
and
are
people.
We are the opposite of Planet Business. We are opposite of Planet Fitness. We are here to judge.
Yes, we are definitely here. This is not a judgment-free zone. Judge the shit out of these people. They're being paid millions of dollars.
Yes.
Like,
you're getting paid millions of dollars if to deal with our criticism.
Yeah, like I deal with people complaining about my podcast that you can download for free all the fucking time. So Ryan Murphy can hear you, Underwood, when you say bullshit. But he won't because he's never going to listen to this podcast.
He's muffling the sound with millions of dollars between his ears and your voice.
Yes, if it were a crime, it would most assuredly be a victimless one. So, you know, it's like shoplifting from Sam's Club.
Do you do that?
No, not since they put the old lady there checking the receipts.
I know, she gets me every time. She's so strong.
Airtight security.
Yeah. That highlighter can't get through it.
You can't, no. You can't fool the highlighter.
Nope.
Ah, the theft rate dropped to zero. Negative, because now thieves are just bringing shit back because they're scared. Shit that they stole from other stores. They're just dumping at the front door like, there's a highlighter.
Sorry.
Anyway, don't feel bad about giving Murphy shit. He doesn't care.
Yeah,
but we care.
Steal the bucket of change from the Salvation Army guy. Whatever.
You know what? If he didn't want a shit stole, he would have a highlighter.
Agreed.
If you'd like to contribute to this car wreck of a podcast, you can do so at ahs@baldmove.com and at forums.baldmove.com, which I thought was hilarious because I was within 5 minutes of the episode giving Hef mad dap for correctly predicting the whole Ten Commandments killer, to my knowledge, would be the first one. The week gap through him, he totally forgot the episode was on that night. He came in this morning to forums holy shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Guess I'm gonna have to watch tonight and gloat.
I was gonna say, do you want to do spoilers? But there's something I want to talk about. I'm gonna wait until the very last episode of the season, which you said.
So
there's gonna be how many?
I thought that they're going to do the standard 8 and then pause and then come back after Christmas for the last 5.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked on Wikipedia and they're keeping on rolling on. The next 2 episodes is She Wants Revenge.
Ooh.
Which is
the band that sang that song, I Want to Tear You Apart.
Yep. And then episode 10 is called She Gets Revenge.
Wah, wah,
so,
wah.
And then there's no other titles. There's no other even TBAs or anything else. So I kind of think maybe American Horror Story is just doing a 10-episode season this year.
Fine.
Which I think is great because I feel like 3 to 4 episodes.
How much more story do we have to get through?
Well, I mean, I would like to know about those children in the other timeline, but
can we do that in 2 episodes?
So here's the things that need to be wrapped up. Bartholomew.
Okay.
Angela Bassett's Revenge.
Okay.
The children rampaging in L.A. And what's going to happen to John. Right? I mean,
yeah, we can.
And
leave.
Liz, I'd like to know where Liz fits in, because is
but
she going to throw in?
If we didn't find out, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't need to be addressed.
I think Liz, I would like to see some kind of happy ending for her. Maybe she stays out of it and just inherits the hotel, and it's exercised, and she can just run it and die of old age. She's already 73.
The only things I'm sure of is there's not going to be a happy ending.
No, no, no.
So we're not going to learn how the hotel has been eradicated of all its ghosts. And Alex isn't going to die. So we're definitely not getting a happy ending.
No, I'm trying to think of who, because where does Alex fit in there? Because I do believe that Elizabeth is going to be fucking furious about this Rin situation.
Okay, can we make some predictions for the last episode?
Sure,
if there's only 2 left?
It's your podcast too.
What do you think is going to happen to Elizabeth? I know you had some ideas before.
I think she's going to die. I think she's going to... she was the clear... after she killed... oh, that's the other thing. We forgot about Rudolph and Valentino.
Right,
and
they have to wrap up, too.
They have to wrap that up. So okay, I so thought that she was the clear villain of the season.
Unless the next two episodes are 2 hours long. I thought she was the
clear villain of the season when she killed Tristan, despite Liz. Because JPM's okay. Obviously, I don't even know if you could say he's more evil, but he's also a sociopath. He doesn't know what it means to love and to have attachments to people,
how
whereas
much
Elizabeth
effect
does.
Effect does he have? I mean, like, physically, how much can he affect the physical world?
I have no idea. Like you pointed out, he stabbed a man.
He stabbed a man. Could he have gotten the man into the room without the help of Sally?
Well, here's the other question.
Who's a
is,
ghost?
Did any of
she
these ghosts really stab him? World. Or did John, is this, was that how John saw him stabbing the man himself?
I don't
because
think so.
I wonder if the ghost can actually do anything to the real world.
It was what Sally said when she offered the man up. Like, here you go. This is my my fee for
I get
another
it.
Year's membership.
I get it. But John was in the room when they stabbed him. There was a flesh and blood human in the room during the stabbing.
Yeah.
Like, think about, has there ever been an instance where ghosts have fucked with people in the hotel beyond just creeping them out?
Yeah.
Who? Name one.
The water ghost lady. She killed a man.
Did she? Or did she just scare the shit out of him and make him, like, choke on water or something? Like, I'm trying to think of an instance where someone...
Sally,
he was an old guy, too.
Sally and the addiction demon murdered Gabriel, the drug addict.
Well, that was the demon. Like, demons are not ghosts. They actually have some power and agency.
Do they?
I think so.
I don't know. Demons aren't a real thing, so
vampires. But I
no,
think...
I'm just saying how it's interpreted in the universe, and it's like Sally has a physical effect on the world. Did the addiction demon?
Yeah,
clearly.
From what I know of fiction, that I consider demons like a step above. Like, you know, demons are either some kind of really powerful non-human spirit creature.
They're like super ghosts.
Former in biblical tradition, they're former angels. So.
So you're saying the addiction demon's the former angel?
Well.
So you're saying heaven is kinky as hell?
Well, that's why he got thrown out. Heaven's not down to the drill bit dildos, but Satan's like, come on down, party.
All right.
Come on down. I got a shit ton of addicts here on this rock. Drill them all, baby. It turns out Satan is Sarah Palin. She's just drill, baby, drill.
Oh, Jesus. Maybe we should stop this.
Yeah. Any other predictions?
Let's just stop while we're ahead. That's about it. That's all I wanted to address.
What's your prediction? Or can we do a podcast that we are not ashamed of before the end of the season?
No. Okay. 0% chance.
All right.
It's going to be just like the bus from Speed. I'll be Keanu Reeves. You can be Sandra Bullock.
Okay.
And we're just going to ride this thing.
She's spunky.
Crazy. Just
I could be a good
swerving all over the place, going 60 miles an hour. We don't know what's going to happen. Maybe we'll explode. Maybe we won't. Mm-hmm. You guys are still sticking around. You want to talk about what we're doing next year?
You know who the part the listener plays? Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper. And then just keep calling in.
Giving
us instructions.
Give us blow some shit. Tell us what we need to do to keep from blowing up. And then, we go on. We have to jump the interstate next. Get off the let us alone, Dennis Hopper.
Well, you know what, listener? You played King Koopa in the Super Mario Brothers movie, so who's the worst person
That's
here?
True. Yeah, who's really the garbage person?
But let's talk about what we're doing next year, in case people decide that
this is it for them. Yeah?
Yeah.
We're
I'm excited about these
Unless
projects.
They happen at the same time, we're going to do Penny Dreadful and Banshee, the final season of Banshee.
Things that we should have done so long ago and we've loved forever.
Question, which should we do if Penny Dreadful and if Penny Dreadful and Banshee are on at the exact same time, which do you cover?
Banshee. It's the last season of Banshee, right?
It is the last season of Banshee.
Banshee's
See, that's my
so
argument.
Good.
I know it's so good, but I'm thinking,
what if they're on the exact same time, what if we did a weekly half cast? And we talked about both.
See, that here's my thing, because I worry with Banshee, it's so good, but it's an action thing. And like actions and comedy things are very hard to cover sometimes, especially when they're really actiony.
I don't so know. I feel I think like they're getting a lot more story heavy as we go along.
No, sure. And there's like plays like who's going to do this and predictions and stuff. But I feel like the call to make would be to cover Penny Dreadful straight up and then do like a 15-minute segment of Banshee talk at the end for people to stay if they want to.
Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe we split out as a separate download, but in the feed. I don't know.
Yeah. Brainstorming.
Dennis Hopper, Dennis, if you're listening, can you call us in and tell us what you want us to do? What do we have to do to keep this bus from exploding?
Yes. Send it to
ahs@baldmove.com.
BanshieDreadful@baldmove.com.
That's a good name. Penny, yeah. Or Penny Banshee.
Pinchy? Pinchy? That sounds like some sort of Japanese sex kink.
Or a Pokemon. I choose you, Pinchu.
You're sick.
Pinchy. Well, apparently I'm like a murderer of children. I'm a pedophile, and now I'm into Pinchy. So
we need to stop.
Yep. It's done. I'm pulling the plug. We will see you guys next week.
If you decide to come back.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Bye.